Rock Springs, where the journey begins. Welcome to the Flaming Gorge Scenic Byway, an all-American road that winds through some of the most awe-inspiring landscapes in the West. This journey begins in Rock Springs, Wyoming, and travels south along U.S. Highway 191. You'll loop through Flaming Gorge National Recreation Area, cross state lines between Wyoming and Utah, and eventually return to Rock Springs via Green River and Interstate 80. Buckle up. The views ahead are worth every mile. Rock Springs sits at nearly 6,400 feet in elevation near the Bitter Creek. Bitter Creek may sound uninviting, but don't let the name fool you. It's played a vital role in this region's history. It flows roughly 80 miles paralleling the old Transcontinental Railroad and modern-day Scenic 80, connecting several Wyoming counties. Rock Springs got its name from a now-dry spring that once bubbled up along stagecoach and railroad routes. However, it was coal mining that really put this area on the map, drawing workers and settlers in droves. Today, Rock Springs is home to around 23,000 residents, with its neighbor Green River just down the road at about 12,000. From here, you'll head south into wide-open, high-desert country, and eventually into deep canyons, expansive forests, and the remarkable reservoir that gives Flaming Gorge its name. The Flaming Gorge National Recreation Area stretches 91 miles long with 360 miles of shoreline. It's part of the Ashley National Forest and was established in 1964 with the construction of Flaming Gorge Dam. Most of the reservoir itself lies in Wyoming, though both states, Wyoming and Utah, share management. As you travel, keep your eyes peeled. Wildlife is everywhere. You may see mule deer, elk, pronghorn antelope, bighorn sheep, and even raptors like hawks and eagles. If it's got hooves, wings, or antlers, chances are you'll meet it here. The theme of this route is wildlife through the ages, so it's not just present-day critters you'll find. Fossils are tucked into these hills, making your route a drive through millions of years of geological history. Coming up ahead is mile marker 500. You're about to cross over some truly historic ground. Start, stop 1. Mile marker 500, U.S. Highway 191. Historic routes, rails, trails, and automobiles. As you cross over the railroad tracks here at mile marker 500, you're tracing the footsteps of thousands who came before, moving westward in search of land, freedom, fortune, or maybe just a little more elbow room. This corridor is one of the most important migration routes in the American West. The landscape might seem rugged, but here in southwestern Wyoming, the Rocky Mountains eased up just enough to let travelers pass. That made this area a natural highway for travelers long before asphalt or train tracks. By the 1840s, this route had become a main thoroughfare for the Oregon Trail, and during pioneer days, it was part of the famous Overland Stage Trail, a dusty, bumpy lifeline across the frontier. By the late 1860s, the Transcontinental Railroad followed the same path, linking east and west by steel. And the Lincoln Highway? That came later in 1913, the first road across America built specifically for cars. It stretched from New York to San Francisco, and yep, passed right through here. Now, the road beneath your tires is U.S. Highway 191. It runs all the way from Canada to the Mexican border, more than 1,600 miles from end to end. Designated in 1926, it's one of the longest three-digit highways in the country. And today, it's your gateway to some unforgettable terrain. If history's your thing, consider coming back to visit Sweetwater County's two historical museums, one in Rock Springs, the other in Green River. Both are free to explore and packed with exhibits on everything from indigenous cultures and pioneer life to outlaws, geology, and coal mining. Coming up next, a unique peak with a big name in Wyoming history, Wilkins Peak. Wilkins Peak, a landmark of science, signal, and single track. Rising in the distance is Wilkins Peak, named after a member of John Wesley Powell's legendary survey team. If that name rings a bell, it should. Powell was the one-armed explorer who mapped the Green and Colorado rivers, floated the Grand Canyon, and pretty much rewrote how we understand the West's geography. Wilkins Peak stands at about 7,650 feet and is just a few miles from both Rock Springs and Green River. It's known for more than just its scenic presence. This mountain is also the namesake of the Wilkins Peak Formation, a segment of the Green River Geological Formation that helps tell the ancient story of this entire region. But this peak isn't all science and no play. It's also home to one of the top-rated mountain bike trail systems in Wyoming. In fact, it's been ranked number one out of 238 mountain bike trails statewide and even cracked the top 100 trails in the world. If you're into biking, names like Pick Your Poison or TNT might sound more like warnings than trails, but trust the locals, they're a blast. These single-track trails twist and turn through dramatic desert terrain with sweeping views of the Green River below. They're open to mountain bikers, hikers, and horseback riders, but motorized vehicles aren't allowed. If you're curious, maps are available on the City of Green River website, and the Sweetwater Mountain Biking Association posts updates on their Facebook page. Now, Wilkins Peak also pulls some behind-the-scenes duty. Those towers up top? They're used for radio and television transmitters, and they help support local emergency services and communication. In fact, when a Wyoming public radio tower was accidentally knocked over in 2003 by a propane delivery truck, the region lost its NPR signal until things got rebuilt. No one was hurt, except maybe plans to catch car talk. Just ahead, the Sweetwater County Shooting Sports Complex and Little Bitter Creek. The Sweetwater County Shooting Sports Complex and Little Bitter Creek. To your right will be the Sweetwater County Shooting Sports Complex, tucked off Little Firehole Road. This facility is open year-round, dawn to dusk, weather permitting, and caters to both seasoned sharpshooters and casual target practice types. There's a 500-yard shooting lane, two 200-yard lanes, 12 benches, and plenty of targets for rifles, pistols, and everything in between. Prefer bows over bullets? There's also an archery range with four courses, shooting bays, shelters, picnic tables, grills, and restrooms. In other words, it's a full-service setup, minus the staff. This is a self-serve range, so bring your own equipment and play safe. Just beyond that, on your left, runs Little Bitter Creek, a quiet tributary of the Green River. Coming up next, a quick geology lesson and a panoramic stop where the ancient past meets dramatic views. It's time for Little Firehole Overlook. The Great Surveys of the American West. So with all this talk of geology and rock formations, you might be wondering, who figured all this stuff out? Well, after the Civil War, the U.S. government and the public were pretty eager to understand this vast, wild western landscape, and that kicked off a golden age of exploration known as the Great Surveys of the American West. Between 1867 and 1879, four major expeditions set out to map and study the land. You'll hear a lot today about John Wesley Powell, and for good reason. He was one of the most influential figures out here. Powell charted rivers, named formations, and eventually became the second director of the U.S. Geological Survey, USGC, an agency that still exists today. But Powell wasn't the only one exploring. The other surveys were led by Ferdinand Hayden, Clarence King, and George Wheeler. Between all four expeditions, two were run by the military, and the other two were led by the Department of the Interior. Each group brought along scientists and specialists of every kind. Zoologists, biologists, paleontologists, geologists, you name it. And once the word got out about what they were discovering, the West became a magnet for just about everyone. Photographers, fossil hunters, investors, farmers, railroad tycoons, journalists, and artists. Of course, long before any of those names showed up, this land was home to Native American nations with deep histories and knowledge of the landscape. What the survey teams did was document, map, and sometimes rename what had already been lived in and understood for generations. Still, their work helped shape the scientific, cultural, and political view of the American West. It led to the creation of the USGS, inspired the formation of national parks, and gave us many of the maps and names we still use today. So the next time you see a formation and wonder who named it or how it ended up in a textbook, there's a good chance it traces back to one of these Big Four expeditions. Stop 21, mile marker 511, U.S. Highway 191. Little Firehole Overlook and the Art Gallery of Time. Welcome to Little Firehole Overlook, sometimes called the Art Gallery of Time. This is your first chance to really stretch your legs and take in the scale of the surrounding landscape. If you have binoculars, this is the time to use them. Same goes for cameras, or just a solid wow if you're going old school. The canyon you're looking at is basically a slow-motion masterpiece carved over millions of years by wind, water, and time. The geological story here followed the same natural process that carved the Grand Canyon, only with a different cast of rock layers. Around 60 million years ago, tectonic forces lifted the Rocky Mountains and the Colorado Plateau. Rain and snowmelt rushed down from the high peaks, cutting deep into the rising rock. Over millions of years, that runoff became the mighty Colorado River, which sculpted the canyon system you see today. Here's a cool term to casually toss around: superimposed stream. It describes a river that cuts straight down through layers of rock, even when those layers are folded, faulted, or wildly uneven. The Green River is one of those streams, relentless and patient, like nature's slowest saw blade. Much of what you see below belongs to the Green River Formation, a geologic treasure trove filled with ancient lake bed sediments, fossilized plants and animals, and rich layers of sandstone, oil shale, and marlstone. Marlstone, by the way, is like a sedimentary cake made of clay and calcium carbonate. Though not visible from here, the Green River, known to indigenous peoples as Seedskedee or Sage Hen River, is the force that carved much of the terrain you see. Early trappers called it the Rio Verde, and General William Ashley officially recorded the name as Green River in 1823. And speaking of Ashley and of rivers, we'll be crossing that very water later at Flaming Gorge Dam, built to help store and manage water across the entire Colorado River system. For now, take a deep breath. You're standing in one of the oldest, wildest, and most scenic corners of the American West. Stop 2, mile marker 513, U.S. Highway 191. Big Firehole Turnout, canyons, spires, and chimneys. This is Big Firehole, the northernmost access point to Flaming Gorge Reservoir. We're heading down a 10-mile narrow road through a section of the Flaming Gorge National Recreation Area, part of the Ashley National Forest. Keep an eye out for towering rock spires, chimneys, and buttes. Along the way, we'll pass a trio of striking landmarks on your right: North Chimney Rock, South Chimney Rock, and a broad butte known as Flat Top. And while the drive-in offers a good peek, the real show is on the way out, so don't worry if the first glance doesn't do them justice. You'll get another chance to see it. Firehole is one of the quieter corners of the reservoir, but there's plenty happening if you know where to look. Peregrine falcons hunt swallows along the cliffs. You might spot western grebes, mule deer, cottontail rabbits, or even a chukar darting across the sagebrush. Chukars are a round, fast little partridge with a red beak and racing stripes. This area was restocked with chukars back in the late 90s after Wyoming traded pronghorn antelope to Nevada in exchange for 250 of them. Some were released by boat, others on foot, and now they're thriving. So if you see a little bird sprinting through the grass like it's late for a meeting, that's a chukar. Firehole is also a great place for anglers. The Wyoming Game and Fish Department stocks this side of the reservoir with rainbow, cutthroat, and lake trout, along with kokanee salmon. Unfortunately, this is also ground zero for some invasive species like zebra and quagga mussels and New Zealand mud snails, which have caused problems for the ecosystem and boaters alike. If you see an inspection station at the launch, that's why. And if you're curious what a mussel-covered motorboat looks like, check out the display at the Flaming Gorge Dam Visitor Center later on in the tour. This part of the lake is often among the first to freeze in winter, making it a popular spot for early season ice fishing. Mile marker 535 to 537, U.S. Highway 191, leaving Firehole, Red Creek Badlands, and Clay Basin. As we climb back out of Big Firehole Canyon, keep an eye to your right. This is where North and South Chimney Rock and Flat Top show off their most dramatic profiles. As Highway 191 stretches ahead, the landscape opens into a wide, rugged panorama. Welcome to the Red Creek Badlands and Clay Basin. From here, you're looking out at layered ridges, remote valleys, and a landscape that holds more history than first meets the eye. A rough dirt road to the east, known locally as Clay Basin Road, branches into the hills and leads to the gravesite of William Bill Pigeon. Pigeon was a well-known figure in these parts around the late 1800s. He worked, lived, and traded across the tri-state area and was part of the tightly knit ranching communities that called this wild region home. But in 1897, Pigeon was murdered under mysterious circumstances that were never fully resolved. You can still visit his gravesite, which lies along Clay Basin Road, marked by a simple headstone that's been cared for over the decades. It's a rare and tangible link to the people who once moved through this untamed country. Just beyond these ridges lies Clay Basin, home to one of the largest underground natural gas storage facilities in the region. With over 1,900 miles of connected pipeline and more than 4 billion cubic feet of gas stored underground, Clay Basin plays a big role in powering homes and cities across Utah, Wyoming, and Idaho. The porous rock layers below hold the gas like a sponge, and a dense cap rock keeps it sealed in place. Dominion Energy manages the operation today, though longtime locals might still call it by its former names, Mountain Fuel or Questar Gas. This region was once a crossroads for early pioneers, military roads, and settlers carving paths between Rock Springs and Browns Park. The surrounding basin is a hotspot for raptors, especially golden eagles, hawks, and owls, thanks to the open space and abundance of prey. Up next, we're approaching Little Mountain, not so little in personality, and steeped in both wild nature and wilder history. Little Mountain and the story of Bill Tabor. Up ahead and to your right is Little Mountain, and while the name might sound humble, this high elevation plateau is anything but small in character. Rising to over 9,100 feet, Little Mountain is a haven for wildlife and one of the most ecologically rich areas in southwestern Wyoming. More than 360 species of animals make their home here, from black bears and mountain lions to elk, moose, sage grouse, and even porcupines. It's a favorite for hunters and hikers alike, but Little Mountain isn't just a natural paradise, it also holds layers of human history. If you look at older maps, you might notice it used to go by other names, including Queen Hornet Mountain and Tabor Mountain, named after one of its earliest residents, Bill Tabor. Tabor was a man of many talents, a frontier hunter, gunsmith, and guide. He was known for his expert marksmanship and for providing meat to stagecoach lines and railroad crews, a critical job in a time when survival often depended on your ability to hunt and handle a rifle. But Bill Tabor also had a reputation for speaking his mind, sometimes a little too freely. While working at a gun shop in Denver, he made the ill-advised decision to shout, "Hooray for Jeff Davis!" a reference to Jefferson Davis, the former president of the Confederacy, during a 4th of July celebration. Let's just say, the crowd didn't take it well. Tabor was given 15 minutes to leave town or face hanging. His response, "Gentlemen, 5 minutes will be enough." He left Denver, came here, and built a life on the rugged slopes. Today, Little Mountain remains a treasured piece of public land, open for hiking, camping, wildlife watching, and for those with the right vehicle, exploring the network of dirt roads that crisscross its backcountry. Some of these roads require vehicles with four-wheel drive and high clearance, but richly reward adventurers for traversing these upper slopes. Here you'll discover sweeping views of Flaming Gorge, Minnie's Gap, and the distant peaks of the Uinta Mountains. There's also deep cultural history here. Native American tribes like the Fremont, Ute, and Shoshone left behind traces of their lives in the form of teepee rings, stone tools, and carved symbols still visible if you know where to look. Coming up next, a canyon overlook, an ancient inland sea, and one of the most unusual trees you'll see in Wyoming. Spring Creek Ranch, the Great Diamond Hoax, and Pinyon Pines. As you continue south along Highway 191, you're passing through a stretch of land that, surprisingly, is home to something rare for Wyoming, pinyon pines. These small evergreens are much more common in places like Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, but this corner of southwest Wyoming is their northernmost reach. Look closely along the hillsides near the Spring Creek and Red Creek basins, and you might catch a glimpse of these hardy little trees making a stand far from their usual range. It's a reminder of how unique this ecosystem is. The mix of pinyon and juniper creates a specialized habitat found nowhere else in Wyoming and supports an equally unique cast of wildlife. Birds like the juniper titmouse, Scots oriole, ash-throated flycatcher, and scrub jay thrive here, along with small mammals like cliff chipmunks and pinyon mice, and even reptiles like the northern plateau lizard and midget-faded rattlesnake. If you're into biodiversity, this stretch is a hidden gem. But not all gems around here were what they seem. This is also the region tied to one of the most infamous scams in Western history, the Great Diamond Hoax of 1872. It all started when two prospectors, Philip Arnold and John Slack, claimed to have discovered a massive deposit of diamonds in a remote part of the West. They brought samples to San Francisco and word spread fast. Investors lined up, including some big names: Charles Tiffany of Tiffany & Company, Baron Rothschild of London, and even Horace Greeley of Go West Young Man fame. Here's the twist: it was all fake. Arnold and Slack had been secretly buying cheap gemstones and salting the site, scattering diamonds, rubies, and sapphires across the ground to fool geologists and investors. For a while, it worked. The scheme unraveled only when Clarence King, one of the West's top government geologists, visited the site and immediately smelled a rat. The gems were too evenly spread, the geology didn't add up, and the con artists, they slipped away with a fortune. The exact location of the hoax is still debated, but many historians believe it happened not far from here, near the Spring Creek Ranch area, close to where you're driving now. Some of the names attached to local landmarks, like Titsworth Gap and Richards Mountain, come from early settlers and characters involved in the region at the time, the same kind of people who might have crossed paths with Arnold and Slack, or at least heard the tale firsthand. And speaking of frontier characters, up next, we're heading toward Minnie's Gap and Brown's Park, a territory once roamed by outlaws, cattle rustlers, and a few names you might recognize from old westerns or wanted posters. Mile marker 549, U.S. Highway 191. Minnie's Gap and Outlaw Country. You're now approaching Minnie's Gap, a windswept pass named after Minnie Krause Rasmussen, one of the region's most remarkable pioneers. Born in Browns Park in 1882, Minnie spent nearly her entire life in this rugged, remote corner of the West, a landscape as resilient and tough as she was. She became the postmaster of Linwood, Utah, a town that once sat along the banks of the Green River, until the construction of Flaming Gorge Dam in the 1960s flooded it. When the government told residents they had to leave, Minnie didn't just pack up her things, she burned her own house down, not out of recklessness, but out of principle. She wasn't going to let anyone else do it for her. Minnie eventually moved to Arizona and passed away at the age of 99. Her ashes were scattered in Browns Park, and a memorial headstone sits just above the road behind you. 100 years after her birth, friends and family held a memorial service back here at Williams Ranch in Minnie's Gap, a fitting tribute to a woman who lived life entirely on her own terms. Her father, Charlie Krause, was also a frontier figure. He ran a butcher shop in Rock Springs and a ranch and store in Browns Park, where he reportedly hired members of the Wild Bunch as ranch hands, including none other than Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And that wasn't unusual around here. This region, stretching across Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado, was part of the Outlaw Trail, a loosely connected network of hideouts used by bandits, rustlers, and fugitives who needed to disappear for a while. Browns Park was one of their key strongholds, remote, rugged, and sitting at the meeting point of three territories with very little cooperation between law enforcement. If things got hot in one jurisdiction, you just slipped across the line. Famous names like Tom Horn, Matt Warner, and Isom Dart passed through here. The Bassett sisters, Josie and Anne, also earned reputations of their own. Anne was dubbed the Queen of the Cattle Rustlers, which sounds glamorous until you realize it just meant she was really good at borrowing livestock that didn't belong to her. Josie was linked romantically with members of the Wild Bunch and lived independently for most of her life. Tough, savvy, and fiercely self-reliant, they were as much a part of this land as the canyons and cottonwoods. Coming up soon, a scenic overlook where we'll see the gorge that gave this whole region its name and hear how John Wesley Powell made it famous. Stop 3, mile marker 401, U.S. Highway 191. Powell's namesake and Antelope Flats turnout. You're now arriving at the Antelope Flats turnout. And this is where the landscape starts to live up to its name. On clear days, this overlook gives you one of the best panoramic views of Flaming Gorge Reservoir with its trademark cliffs glowing red in the sun. It was views like this seen from the waters below during Powell's 1869 expedition that inspired him to name it Flaming Gorge. When Powell first floated through here, the afternoon light bouncing off the red sandstone walls left an impression strong enough to make the name stick, and over 150 years later, you can see why. Powell is one of the most important figures in the exploration of the American West. After losing an arm in the Civil War, he didn't slow down. Instead, he led expeditions down the Green and Colorado Rivers, becoming the first known white man to navigate the Grand Canyon. No GPS, no modern boats, just grit, maps, and a whole lot of nerve. He also played a huge role in shaping U.S. science and land policy. As director of the U.S. Geological Survey, he warned Congress that the West didn't have enough water to support large-scale farming, a message nobody really wanted to hear at the time. But he wasn't wrong. His early insights still influence how we think about water in the West today. As you scan across the reservoir, you can see the town of Manila, Utah, and the Lucerne Marina. You'll be visiting those later. And the towering red cliff across the water, that's Sheep Creek Canyon, where the lake begins to narrow into the deeper canyon reaches that follow. Off in the distance, you'll also spot the Uinta Mountains, one of the few mountain ranges in North America that run east to west instead of north to south. Formed over a billion years ago, geologists believe they once stood 5 miles taller than they do today. Erosion's been working overtime, and this spot, Antelope Flats, is also a great place to look for pronghorn antelope, especially in the early summer. Often mistaken for true antelope, these animals are actually unique to North America. With their long legs and excellent eyesight, they can hit speeds up to 55 miles per hour and keep that pace up for miles. Their speed is second only to the cheetah, but with much better endurance. So take in the view and snap a photo. You're now about two-thirds of the way down the reservoir. From here, the canyon grows deeper, the water bluer, and the history even richer. Coming up next, Mustang Ridge, a fire with a wild origin story and one of the most popular swimming spots in the gorge. Mile marker 398, U.S. Highway 191. Mustang Ridge, Sunny Cove, and the 2002 fire. Just ahead is the turnoff for Mustang Ridge, one of the most popular recreation areas along Flaming Gorge, and home to campgrounds, boat launches, and Sunny Cove, a local favorite for swimming. On a warm day, you'll often find families stretched out on the beach or kayakers gliding across the cove's clear, calm waters. But this peaceful spot also carries the memory of a fire that swept through the area in 2002, a fire started by something as simple as a flat tire. A man was towing a camper out of the campground when one of his tires blew. The exposed axle started dragging on the pavement, throwing sparks into the dry brush lining the road. According to some accounts, a Forest Service employee on the scene made the call to keep the man moving before the fire could be put out, probably hoping to prevent a traffic jam or greater hazard. The result? Those sparks ignited the grass in several places along the road. The fire spread fast, ultimately burning over 20,000 acres from this ridge all the way north toward Rock Springs and south into Diamond Mountain, Utah. The total cost to contain it, $3 million. It was one of the most destructive fires in Wyoming that year, and a reminder of how quickly things can change in a high desert landscape. You'll still see areas where the fire scorched trees and stripped hillsides bare. The recovery has been slow, especially in places where the heat was intense enough to sterilize the soil. But over time, wild grasses and shrubs have been returning, especially in areas where the soil wasn't burned too deeply. And for wildlife, fire can sometimes be beneficial, clearing out overgrown brush and making way for new, nutritious plant growth. Elk and mule deer often use these burned areas for grazing in late winter and early spring, when fresh green shoots start to emerge. So while Mustang Ridge is now once again a place for campfires, fishing poles, and beach towels, the land here remembers. And like much of the West, it continues to adapt, renew, and remind us that even a blown tire can have a lasting impact. Next up, we head toward Little Hole Road, a stretch of river beloved by anglers and hikers and home to one of the best blue ribbon trout fisheries in the entire country. Mile marker 396, U.S. Highway 191. Little Hole and Blue Ribbon Waters. To your left is the turnoff for Little Hole Road, a scenic and beloved section of the Green River Corridor. This 7.2-mile segment of river, from Flaming Gorge Dam downstream to Little Hole, is considered one of the top blue ribbon trout fisheries in the United States. If you're an angler, this is sacred water. Along this stretch, the Green River winds through canyon walls and deep pools, holding thousands of trout per mile, mostly rainbows and browns, with some fish reaching truly impressive sizes. The cool, clear water released from the bottom of Flaming Gorge Dam creates the perfect environment for trout, and the insect life here is off the charts. Think of it as an all-you-can-eat buffet, 24/7. If you're not fishing, there's still plenty to do. A scenic trail hugs the riverbank for the entire 7-mile run, popular with hikers, birders, and those just looking to soak in the scenery. There are also drift boat tours available from local outfitters in Dutch John and at Flaming Gorge Resort if you'd rather float than foot it. In earlier times, this stretch of river helped support seasonal livestock drives, part of a broader pattern of ranching that followed waterways like the Green River across the region. Cattle and sheep were herded along the river from seasonal grazing grounds following the water and foraging through spring and summer. Today, the land is quieter, but the rhythm of the water remains the same, steady, cold, and alive with movement. Whether you're casting a fly, snapping a photo, or just listening to the river flow, this is one of the most peaceful stretches on the entire Flaming Gorge Loop. Coming up next, a tiny town with a big name, Dutch John, and some clarification about who he was or wasn't. Dutch John and the Dam Overlook. Welcome to Dutch John, not just a quirky name on the map, but a tiny town with deep roots in the story of Flaming Gorge Dam. Let's clear up one thing first. Dutch John wasn't Dutch. His real name was John Hanselina, and he was likely German by descent. But in the 1800s, English speakers often used the term Dutch for people of German origin, a mix-up that stuck. Hanselina was known for trading horses in this area, and while his fate is a bit of a mystery, his name lives on in the town that sprang up here during dam construction. Today, Dutch John is home to a small but vibrant community, mostly folks who work in recreation, wildlife services, or help run the dam and marina operations. It's also the jumping-off point for many fishing trips and river tours in the area. Just ahead is the Flaming Gorge Dam Overlook, a short side road that gives you a sweeping view of the dam and reservoir from above. From here, you can truly appreciate the project's scale. The waters below you are up to 400 feet deep, and on any given day, you might spot fishing boats trolling for lake trout or lakers with shisuckers, which can grow to jaw-dropping sizes. The Utah state record as of 2020 tipped the scales at 53 pounds. It's worth taking a few minutes at the overlook to see how the reservoir stretches northward, winding through the canyons carved by the Green River, now backed up behind the dam like a liquid ribbon. The surrounding cliffs are composed of red and white layers of sandstone and limestone, shaped by ancient inland seas and millennia of uplift and erosion. From here, you're just minutes away from the Flaming Gorge Visitor Center, where we'll make a longer stop. It's the best place to learn more about the dam, get a closer look at the structure, and maybe even pick up a souvenir or two. Next stop, the dam itself, where science, engineering, and scenery come together at the heart of the Flaming Gorge story. The Visitor Center at Flaming Gorge Dam. You've reached the heart of it all. Flaming Gorge Dam, the reason this entire reservoir exists and a centerpiece of the region's history, ecology, and recreation. Built between 1959 and 1964, the dam stands 502 feet tall, holding back the waters of the Green River and creating the 91-mile-long Flaming Gorge Reservoir. The dam was authorized under the 1956 Colorado River Storage Project Act, which aimed to manage water, generate hydroelectric power, support irrigation, and provide outdoor recreation opportunities. A tall order, but one that's still being fulfilled. The visitor center here is open to the public and features a massive topographical model of the reservoir, great for getting a bird's eye understanding of just how far you've traveled. You'll also find interpretive exhibits, a small gift shop, and access to an overlook platform with a stunning view of the dam and river below. While tours of the dam itself aren't currently offered, you can still walk the pedestrian bridge near it for a great vantage point. You'll be standing above one of the most critical water management tools in the western United States, a structure that provides drinking water, irrigation, and hydroelectric power to millions of people across multiple states and even parts of Mexico. This is also the headwaters for the Colorado River Storage Project, the same system that includes Glen Canyon, Lake Powell, and other major dams. In fact, when President John F. Kennedy kicked off power generation here in 1963, it marked a new era of harnessing the rivers of the West for large-scale development, but with great infrastructure comes great responsibility. The region is still wrestling with how to balance water demand with long-term sustainability, something John Wesley Powell warned about more than a century ago when he told Congress the West simply didn't have enough water for widespread agriculture. As usual, Powell was ahead of his time. Take your time here, stretch your legs, take some photos, and be sure to use the restrooms. Next, we'll pass through Greendale Junction, the crossroads of the byway and the gateway to more forested country ahead. U.S. Highway 191 and UT Highway 44, Greendale Junction and Sweat Ranch. Just ahead is Greendale Junction, where U.S. Highway 191 meets Utah Highway 44. It's a bit of a scenic crossroads. From here, you could continue south toward Vernal, Utah and Dinosaur Country, or loop back north toward Green River and Rock Springs. For this tour, we're heading north, into the forested hills around Red Canyon. This area, known as Greendale, has roots that go back more than a century. The first district forest ranger here was Bill Green, who arrived in 1910. He and his wife Vivian built a ranger station and post office nearby, laying the groundwork for what would become a small but close-knit community of ranchers and Forest Service employees. The name Greendale comes from the Green family, not the river, although it's a nice coincidence. And speaking of ranches, just a mile north of the junction is a turnoff for one of the best-preserved historical homesteads in the region, Sweat Ranch. In 1909, a 16-year-old named Oscar Sweat picked out a homestead site in the high country. He was too young to file the claim himself, so his widowed mother did it for him. Oscar and his wife Emma moved into a one-room log cabin in 1913, and over the years they built a life here, raising 9 kids and building 18 structures, including a root cellar, granary, meat house, and several homes. Oscar worked the ranch with horse-powered equipment well into the 1940s. He famously refused to install indoor plumbing, insisting that a bathroom doesn't belong in the house. Hard to argue with a man who lived through 2 world wars and hauled water by hand. The family held on to the ranch until the late 1960s. In 1972, the U.S. Forest Service acquired the property and restored it as a historic site. Today, you can tour the ranch in summer months. It's on the National Register of Historic Places and gives a vivid look at what it took to live, raise a family, and survive out here in the not-so-distant past. Keep an eye out for the Sweat Ranch sign and follow the 1.5-mile dirt road to reach your destination. It's usually accessible in a regular vehicle if the road isn't muddy. Stop 5, mile marker 1.5, UT Highway 44, Red Canyon Lodge and West Greens Lake. As you pull into the West Greens Lake Nature Area, keep your eyes peeled. This is prime territory for spotting Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep. They're often seen along the rugged slopes near the road, especially in the early morning or late afternoon. If you see something that looks like a rock with horns, it might not be a rock. This spot is near both Red Canyon Lodge's private lake and the public West Greens Lake nearby. It's one of the more family-friendly stops along the byway with shady trails and gorgeous scenery. If you're traveling with kids or just want to stretch your legs, this is a great place to explore. There's a pet-friendly lodge here with rustic cabins, a restaurant, and a gift shop if you're in the mood for a souvenir. You'll also find activities like horseback riding, paddle boats, and even a kid-friendly fishing pond. And for those who like a little wildlife with their walk, keep an eye out for marmots, deer, and plenty of birds around the lake and its marshy edges. Greens Lake, just a short distance away, is another great location to cast a line or snap some photos. In winter, this whole area turns into a snow-dusted playground for cross-country skiing and snowshoeing, but in warmer months, it's all about hiking, paddling, and soaking up the expansive views. If you've been looking for a shady place to pause for a bit and maybe grab a meal, this is it. Stop 6, mile marker, 3.5 UT Highway 44. Visitor Center, Bighorn Sheep, and the Red Canyon Overlook. You're now heading into Red Canyon, one of the most iconic and dramatic sections of the Flaming Gorge region. The elevation climbs here to around 7,000 feet, and the air feels a little crisper, the woods a little thicker. This high country is where the desert gives way to pine forests, and the cliffs drop off in spectacular fashion. As you cruise, keep an eye on the rocky slopes, and if you're lucky, you'll spot a bighorn sheep. These sure-footed climbers were once in serious decline due to disease and habitat loss, but through decades of conservation work, their populations have rebounded here in Utah and southwest Wyoming. The males, known as rams, are famous for their massive, curling horns and for the echoing sound of head-butting battles during mating season. Females, or ewes, have shorter, more slender horns and are often seen with lambs in tow. If you spot them, they're often nibbling on grasses or resting on narrow rock ledges with unnerving confidence. Archaeological evidence shows bighorn sheep were well known to indigenous peoples, especially the Fremont, Ute, and Shoshone. These animals appear frequently in rock art throughout the West, especially in petroglyphs and pictographs. Early European explorers also noted their abundance, and journals from the 1700s and 1800s are full of mentions of wild sheep in this very canyon. Up ahead is the Red Canyon Overlook, one of the most breathtaking vistas in the entire region. The canyon walls drop 1,700 feet straight down to the reservoir, with cliffs composed of layered red and gray sandstone that seem to glow in the afternoon light. A network of short trails near the overlook lets you safely explore the rim. Most of it is fenced, but still, watch your step, especially if you're traveling with children. Here, the Red Canyon Visitor Center is perched right on the edge of the cliffs with floor-to-ceiling windows that frame the view like a giant natural painting. Inside, you'll find interpretive displays, geology exhibits, and often a ranger or volunteer available to answer questions. This area is also home to some high country wildlife you might not expect, like marmots, Clark's nutcrackers, and even the occasional black bear. And before you leave the overlook, don't miss the strange but true local legend, the story of Amos Hill, the Red Canyon Hermit. The legend of Amos Hill and Dowd Mountain. As you wrap up your time at Red Canyon and continue north, the views remain jaw-dropping, but so do the stories. One of the more peculiar tales tied to this area is that of Amos Hill, known locally as the Red Canyon Hermit. In 1922, two government surveyors stumbled upon Hill living alone in a dugout, essentially a hand-dug cave, on the edge of the canyon. They described his home as about the size of a dog kennel. Not exactly spacious. Amos had moved into the canyon around 1900 at the age of 50. He lived off the land, growing vegetables, alfalfa, and corn using diverted creek water. His fashion sense was practical. His outfit included a burlap sack with holes cut for his head and arms, a pair of cowhide boots, and the rubber upper halves of an old pair of rain boots sewn on top. Let's just say he wasn't overly concerned with style. Hill wasn't exactly a socialite. In fact, he was known to be ornery and had run-ins with the law, but he managed to evade trouble for more than 20 years hiding out in the canyon. Eventually, when age caught up to him, he moved into town, Vernal, Utah, and passed away in 1938. He's buried in Rock Point Cemetery in nearby Macer. Not far from here is another landmark with a name and backstory worth pausing for, Dowd Mountain, rising on your right. Named after Cleophas Dowd, this mountain is now known for its scenic overlooks and mountain biking trails, but in the late 1800s, it was home to one of the more complicated characters in frontier law enforcement. Dowd was trained to be a Catholic priest, but on the night of his ordination, he got drunk, shot a man, stole his father's racehorse, and fled west. So not exactly the path the church had in mind. He eventually settled in Sheep Creek Canyon in 1885, where he built a ranch, trained horses, and, perhaps ironically, served as a deputy sheriff, railroad detective, and a Pinkerton informant. Playing both sides of the law wasn't uncommon back then, but it was risky. In 1897, Dowd was murdered, likely by a man named Charles Reeser, who had his own long-standing grudge. Some say it was over cattle rustling betrayals. Others say it was a personal feud. Reeser claimed self-defense and was acquitted, but according to local lore, Butch Cassidy himself warned Reeser to leave the territory. He disappeared to Myrna, Wyoming, and was never seen in these parts again. Today, you can visit the graves of Cleophas Dowd and two of his children just off Forest Road 218, which also leads to the Sheep Creek Geological Loop. And that's exactly where you're headed next, into one of the richest geological windows in the entire West. Mile marker 14.5 to 22, UT Highway 44, Sheep Creek Geological Loop and Tower Rock. Welcome to the Sheep Creek Geological Loop, a 13-mile scenic road that winds through an extraordinary record of Earth's history, nearly 800 million years worth, all exposed in dramatic layers right before your eyes. This region has been designated a National Geological Area for good reason. The road winds through 10 distinct rock formations stacked like a vertical timeline, with ancient red sandstones from the Precambrian era butting up against much younger gray limestones from the Paleozoic period. These formations were folded, faulted, and uplifted by the rise of the Uinta Mountains. At the Sheep Creek Canyon Overlook, you'll see one of the most stunning examples of this geological mashup. There, the Hades Pass Formation, about 770 million years old, is literally pressed up against Deseret Limestone, which is nearly half that age. Thanks to a massive fault line, the two very different layers sit side by side like neighbors who've never met. One of the most striking features along the loop is Tower Rock, a vertical sandstone column rising from the canyon wall like the ruins of some ancient fortress. This is similar to a hoodoo, a rock pillar, carved by wind and water at different rates, leaving behind a tall, narrow column. Tower Rock is made of Weber sandstone, originally formed from ancient wind-blown sand dunes about 285 million years ago, back when this landscape was more desert than mountain. But for all its beauty, this canyon also carries a somber memory. In 1965, a powerful rainstorm triggered a debris flow that swept down Sheep Creek and struck a campground near the Palisades Formation, killing seven members of a single family during the night. The site was later designated Palisades Memorial Park, and its use was restricted to daytime hours. Debris from the event, including warped pipes and concrete fragments, can still be seen in the area. Keep in mind, this entire region was once the floor of a vast ancient lake, Lake Gosiute. That's why so many fossils are found here, turtles, fish, and coral. These animals once roamed the shores of a lush inland sea where you now see cliffs and canyons. It's not every day you drive through almost a billion years of Earth's story in just a few miles, but that's exactly what you're doing here. Coming up next, a stop at Sheep Creek Bay Overlook. Stop 7, mile marker 17.5, UT Highway 44. Sheep Creek Bay and the Uintatherium. Now approaching Sheep Creek Bay, where ancient rock meets deep water and where the past feels unusually present. This bay marks the northern edge of the Sheep Creek geological area and offers one of the clearest views into both the natural history and the prehistory of this landscape. Look closely at the cliffs around you. Their layered formations tell a story that spans hundreds of millions of years, and many of those layers are full of fossils. Long before this became a recreational paradise, this land was submerged beneath Lake Gosiute, a massive inland sea that once covered what's now southwest Wyoming, northeast Utah, and parts of Colorado. The lake bed collected layer upon layer of sediment, trapping and preserving the remains of everything from fish and aquatic plants to turtles and ancient mammals. One of the most famous of those creatures is the Uintatherium, a rhinoceros-sized, horn-knobbed, saber-toothed mammal that lived around 40 million years ago during the Eocene epoch. Its fossils have been found in these very formations. Despite its fearsome appearance, the Uintatherium was a plant eater, just a really big one with a very dramatic look. The region became a hotbed of fossil discovery in the late 1800s, thanks in part to the infamous Bone Wars, a heated rivalry between two paleontologists, Othniel Charles Marsh and Edward Drinker Cope. They raced each other across the West, trying to out-discover and out-publish one another, often in spectacularly petty fashion. Both passed through this area in their quest to name and claim new prehistoric species, and both left behind a lasting scientific legacy. You might find geodes in this region, rounded rocks with crystal-lined centers, especially in nearby outcrops and washes. The difference between a geode and a nodule? A geode has a hollow space. A nodule is solid all the way through. Either one is a pretty cool find. Beyond the geology, this is also a fantastic stop for photography, bird watching, and simply soaking up the sheer scale of the land. The water here marks the transition from the wider reaches of the reservoir into the narrower canyons ahead. Coming up, a quick walk, a small footbridge, and one of the most spectacular seasonal phenomena in the area, the life cycle of the Kokanee salmon. Stop 8, mile marker 22, UT Highway 44. Kokanee salmon and the interpretive trail. Up next is a quiet little spot with a big natural event, the Kokanee Salmon Run. This area near Sheep Creek Canyon includes a short interpretive trail, a footbridge, and a series of signs that tell the story of one of the most fascinating seasonal cycles in the Flaming Gorge ecosystem. Kokanee salmon are a landlocked version of the sockeye salmon. Unlike their ocean-going cousins, Kokanee live their entire lives in freshwater, and just like their coastal relatives, they end their lives in a dramatic final act. Each year, between late August and November, Kokanee salmon leave the deep, cool waters of Flaming Gorge Reservoir and travel upstream to spawn. As they prepare to lay and fertilize their eggs, their bodies turn a vivid, unmistakable red. Once the spawning is complete, the adults die, their four-year life cycle fulfilled. If you're here during that season, the footbridge offers a front-row seat to the action. You might see dozens, even hundreds, of red-bodied fish working their way upstream, the water alive with movement. And hovering nearby, bald eagles, ospreys, and other birds of prey, waiting for an easy meal. The salmon's death feeds the ecosystem in every direction. Even if you're not here during spawning season, this spot is still worth a visit. The walk is short and easy, with interpretive signs that explain the biology and importance of Kokanee salmon to the region. You'll also find vault toilets and a few benches if you want to linger. Keep your eyes open for other wildlife, too. This area is known for mule deer, yellow warblers, black-headed grosbeaks, and occasionally a well-camouflaged bull snake basking near the rocks. If you decide to take the short trail, enjoy the scenery, but do be mindful of how close the highway is, and if you're traveling with kids, be sure to keep them nearby. Manila, Linwood, and the town beneath the lake. Welcome to Manila, Utah, a quiet ranching community and the largest town in Daggett County with a population of just over 1,100 people. It may be small, but it plays an outsized role in the Flaming Gorge story, especially when it comes to the people who called this land home, even after it was underwater. Before the Flaming Gorge Reservoir filled up in the 1960s, there was another town nearby called Linwood. It sat on the banks of the Green River and was a tight-knit community of ranchers, storekeepers, and tough Western families. When plans for the Flaming Gorge Dam were finalized, the government informed Linwood's residents that their town would be flooded. Many homes and buildings were physically moved to higher ground and to Manila, but not everyone took it lying down. One of them was Minnie Krause Rasmussen, the same Minnie from Minnie's Gap. Faced with the idea of watching the government destroy her home, she made her own decision and she burned it down herself. Minnie's legacy lives on across this landscape, and she wasn't alone in her fierce independence. Many families who relocated to Manila carried with them generations of ranching knowledge and a deep connection to this land. Linwood had its quirks. Its schoolhouse famously straddled the Utah-Wyoming border. Local lore says that when disciplinary action was required, students were sent to the Wyoming side, where corporal punishment was still legal, but probably not the most ethical. There was also the Smith and Larson Mercantile, a general store that served as the heart of town, along with a dance hall and the wonderfully named Bucket of Blood Saloon, the kind of name that tells you everything you need to know about its clientele. Some of the most prominent ranching families in this region trace their roots back to Linwood. They relied on two early canal systems that diverted water from the Green River and the Henry's Fork, vital in a region where water wasn't just important, it was survival. As you drive through Manila, you're passing through a place that isn't just about what's visible, but also about what's submerged. Beneath the surface of Flaming Gorge Reservoir lies a community that once thrived, worked hard, danced on Saturday nights, and eventually gave way to progress, whether they agreed with it or not. Henry's Fork Wetlands and the First Rendezvous. As you leave Manila behind, the land opens up into the high desert again, but tucked into this wide, dry country is a surprising patch of green, the Henry's Fork Wetlands. Fed by the Henry's Fork River, this wetland area supports a diverse mix of wildlife and plant life. You'll spot cattails, willows, and cottonwoods clustered along the water, while the surrounding hills offer open sagebrush country for mule deer, pronghorn antelope, and even moose, especially near dawn or dusk. Birders take note. This area is home to everything from yellow-headed blackbirds to great blue herons. And in migration season, it's not uncommon to spot sandhill cranes or flocks of waterfowl moving through. These wetlands may be small, but they're incredibly important for both resident and migratory species. But this peaceful spot wasn't always so quiet. In fact, historians believe in 1825, it was the site of the very first Rocky Mountain Rendezvous, a historic gathering of fur trappers, Native American tribes and traders that helped define the early economy of the American West. Back then, the fur trade was booming, and mountain men would gather once a year to exchange pelts for supplies, swap news, and, let's be honest, throw a bit of a party. These rendezvous were crucial to the success of fur companies like Ashley's Hundred, the outfit led by General William Ashley, who mapped much of this region and gave the Green River its English name. Henry's Fork was selected for that first rendezvous because of its good water, good grazing for horses, and good relations with the Shoshone, who camped here seasonally. What began as a practical trading event quickly became a legendary annual tradition, part business meeting, part festival, part survival strategy. Today, if you stop and listen near the wetlands, you can imagine the noise and energy of that first rendezvous, the clatter of pack trains, the calls of traders and trappers, the singing, the bargaining, and the laughter. Stop 9, mile marker 43, UT Highway 44. Lucerne Peninsula, pronghorn antelope, ice cream, and campsites. Welcome to Lucerne Peninsula, a place where high desert wildlife meets waterside recreation and where pronghorn antelope roam not far from fishing boats and campground grills. This is one of the busiest developed areas along Flaming Gorge Reservoir. The peninsula stretches out into the lake with broad, open vistas and offers some of the best chances to spot pronghorn antelope, those speed-loving, keen-eyed mammals unique to North America. They're often seen grazing in the open sagebrush flats or moving in small herds across the rolling hills. But Lucerne isn't just for wildlife viewing. It's also home to the Lucerne Valley Marina, a full-service stop for travelers, campers, and boaters. Whether you're launching a boat, topping off your cooler, or just looking for a cold treat, yes, there's ice cream, this is one of the easiest places to take a break and enjoy the lake. There's an RV park, boat rentals, fuel dock, general store, and plenty of room to stretch your legs. If you're staying overnight in the area, this is a great spot to refuel and recharge, whether that means gas, groceries, or just a little extra shade. The marina also plays host to seasonal events and fishing tournaments, and it's a launch point for accessing some of the deeper reaches of Flaming Gorge by water. Take a minute here to enjoy both the wild and the well-equipped sides of the byway. Coming up, the town of Manila, where ranching stories and submerged towns begin to surface. Mile marker 31, UT Highway 44, Bringer Crossing. Keep your eyes peeled just past mile marker 31. This is where you'll spot the turnoff for Bringer Crossing, CFFSDN, one of the more remote places to access Flaming Gorge. There's not much here except gravel, sagebrush, and a whole lot of silence, which is part of the appeal. Before the dam was built, Bringer Ferry operated right here, a small, hand-pulled ferry boat that helped ranchers move cattle and gear across the Green River. Today the ferry's gone, but the name stuck and the sense of old-school frontier travel is alive and well. This is a rough road, high-clearance vehicles only, but it's used by anglers looking to launch drift boats and by folks who just want a quiet stretch of shoreline away from the buzz of the marinas. If you're up for a detour and have the tires to match, take it slow and enjoy the space. There are no services here, so it's definitely a bring-your-own-everything situation. But what you'll get in return are panoramic views, maybe a hawk overhead, and the kind of stillness that makes you forget you're only a few miles from the highway. Mile marker 24, UT Highway 44, Buckboard Marina. That little water tower up ahead, that's the sign you're approaching Buckboard Marina, the northernmost full-service marina on the lake, and a longtime favorite with locals. Back in the day, wagon trails passed through this area, and the roads haven't gotten that much smoother. But the marina's a great stop, whether you're fishing, camping, or just craving a snack and a boat ramp. You'll find a launch, fuel, a convenience store, boat repairs, and in summer, a bar and grill where fishing stories grow taller with every retelling. In winter, this spot becomes a hub for ice fishing. Think little pop-up villages of tents or mini houses stretching out across the frozen lake. If you're here when that happens, it's worth a look. Sculpted towers and barren lands. You're now driving through what the map calls the Barren Lands, but don't let the name fool you. This stretch is full of character, especially if you're into geology, photography, or places that look like they belong on another planet. On both sides of the road, you'll see rock chimneys, spires, and strange wind-carved towers rising from the earth. These were formed over millions of years as ancient sediment layers were worn down by wind and water. If you could slice open one of these formations, it would tell a story stretching back to prehistoric lakes and long-gone rivers. There aren't formal trailheads or overlooks, but there are a few safe places to pull off and take it all in. Sunlight in the early morning or late afternoon brings out the reds and golds in the stone. Perfect if you're traveling with a camera or just want that moment where the landscape makes you say, "Whoa." It's quiet here. Just you, the road, and the rocks. Enjoy it. Stop 10, Green River, WI. Expedition Island, And here we are, Expedition Island, in the town of Green River, Wyoming. This island marks the spot where John Wesley Powell and his crew set off in wooden boats in 1869, heading into the wild unknown of the Green and Colorado Rivers. They had no maps, no backup, and Powell famously only had one arm, the other lost in the Civil War. But what they did have was grit, curiosity, and a deep desire to understand the land. The journey eventually led them through the Grand Canyon, and it all started right here. Today, the island's a peaceful park with a pedestrian bridge, riverside trails, picnic tables, and interpretive signs that bring Powell's story to life. If you have a little time, hop out and take a walk. It's a great spot to snap pictures and imagine what it must have felt like to launch into unmapped territory. Journey's End, heading back to Rock Springs. If you've made it this far, you've completed the Flaming Gorge Scenic Byway. Along this loop, you've passed through nearly a billion years of geology, crossed through the homelands of Fremont, Ute, and Shoshone tribes, and stood in places where outlaws hid, salmon spawned, and paleontologists dug. You've seen the work of rivers, glaciers, and even fire. And if you've been paying close attention, maybe you've noticed how much of this region still feels wild, not in the untamed sense, but in the way that it remains honest, weathered, and still a little untold. So as you descend toward the highway and the hum of traffic starts to return, take one last look over your shoulder at the cliffs, the canyons, the tracks in the dirt. You've traveled the Flaming Gorge Scenic Byway, a loop full of stories. And if it's done its job, you're leaving with a few of your own. Thanks for riding along.